Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Writer's Block. It is Thursday, 8 o'clock, and I'm your host, Bobby Jean Bell. And here in the studio tonight is our guest author, Susan Dedish, and we'll be chatting with her in just a moment. We're going to send out a special greeting to our host, Jim Christina, who is not able to be with us here tonight. Jim, we sure look forward to having you back with us next week. I know how much you enjoyed the book that we'll be chatting about tonight, and we will be reading in just a few moments a review that you wrote about it on Amazon. In the meantime, again, we want to invite you to The Writer's Block, brought to you each week by Black Dog Publishing out of Simi Valley, by Out West in Old Town Newhall, and by our good friends at Target Freight Management. In fact, I'm going to do a little special thank you to Target Freight right now. We mention them every show, and we mention that they have a full truckload service that's the best in the industry. But have we mentioned that TFM Truckload gets your freight there every time, on time? No muss, no fuss, at the rates you need for your transportation bottom line. Call today at 1-844-653-7789 and tell them you heard it on The Writer's Block, and they'll have a little something extra for you. And while we're at it, if you are an LTL shipper, you are probably looking for the best rates at the lowest hassle possible. Call Target Freight Management. Their customized transportation management system is just the ticket to getting your freight moved your way. Call Target Freight Management today at 1-888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web. Call today. You won't be sorry you did. So thank you again for joining us tonight on The Writer's Block, and we are thrilled to have with us here live in the studio after a four-hour drive from San Diego, our guest author, Sue Dedish.
Welcome, Sue. Thank you. I'm very pleased to be here.
It's so fun to have a guest live in the studio. We love all of our guests, and the ones that call in from all over the country, we always, of course, enjoy that too. But it's really fun to have somebody we can look at face to face here in the studio.
Thank you. I look forward to the phone calls, so please call in.
Yeah, now you had a little bit of a drive today.
I did. It was long. It was very crowded. LA Freeway. Yeah, and a lot of construction.
Yeah, a lot of construction.
Made it here in good time.
Well, we're so happy to have you.
Thank you.
I'm going to tell you a little bit about tonight's guest, Sue Dedish, who writes under the pseudonym of Blake S. Lee, is a longtime resident of San Diego. She is married, the mother of three daughters and four grandchildren, who delightfully fill her time. Having taught at La Jolla High School English Literature, she has a profound respect for the written word and admiration for the insightfulness of other brilliant minds who have expressed it. Rest Now, Beloved, based on a true cold case of 1933 in San Diego, is her debut novel. Sue, what an amazing book.
Thank you very much, Bobby.
It was
a work of love.
I bet. And Jim handed it off to me a few weeks ago after he had devoured it. And he said, you have to read this. And then each week when I'd see him, he'd say, have you started it yet? Tell us a little bit about just your background and how you came to be a writer.
I've been a writer. In fact, I do want to take a quote from a book I'm reading by Natalie Goldberg. It's The Great Spring, because I have written before, but this is the first book that I've tried to pursue as a novel in the marketing end of writing a book. But in the book, there's a section where she said, I wrote, got married, had a son, didn't start up again until my 60s. She's asked, was it hard giving it up? Oh, no, she said. All those years I didn't write, I never stopped seeing as a writer. And I think writers have it inside of them. It's so internal. What they see differently than most people. And what they feel more differently than most people. But writing is a very, very lonesome, very isolating sort of profession. But it's something that you have to do in order to fulfill yourself, your needs. So I've written two or three novels before this. My husband saw me working on this from 2005 until 2015 when I published it. And he said, you've got to go the whole route. You've got to walk down that whole journey and take it to yourself and see just where it goes. So that's what I'm doing now. I'm putting it out there for people to read and get back to me and with all their thoughts and insights.
How did this story find you, or how did you find it?
Well, the story found me. There are two characters in the book. There's Pete McGraw and there's Sarah Schilling. And in those two characters, I see myself as the person who was compulsively obsessed with this book and the person who sought out the answers through information. When I was taking a class from a Dr. Ray Brandis at the University of San Diego in San Diego back in 1990. it was a historical archives class, and the professor threw out names for the students, and you sort of caught the names and said, okay, I'm going to see what I can find out about this, knowing that it was probably an unsolved crime. And the name that was handed out that I thought was very interesting was an Armenian name in the 30s in San Diego, and I didn't know anything more than the name of the victim. And so I got this case, and the first thing I found out was the victim was a child. And I went out to the cemetery and sat by his grave for a while. And from that moment on, he just connected with me. And I wanted to get to the bottom of his life. I felt he was a child. He had a voice. He had something to say. And by the time I finished my investigation, I knew that he had been subdued into quietness, and by corruption, by people mishandling his case, and it was wrong. But I finished my course, put it aside for 15 years, and then took it out again in 2005 and started writing it into a novel. And what incited me to do this was the case had sat on cold case shelves for 60 years as an unsolved crime. It was actually an accidental death. Well, I'll tell you more about that. But when the sheriff's department came out in 2005 again and said it was an accidental death, I had done all the research. I knew that was wrong. So that's why I pulled out all my information and started again writing this in. It was an unsolved sort of a case at that point, so I wrote it into a fiction. But the story needed to be told, and I needed to tell it.
And you do so beautifully. Some of the words that show up over and over again, reviews, there are lots of reviews, for instance, on Amazon. People have just given this book 5 stars over and over again. And you see words like fascinating, engrossing, captivating, couldn't put it down. Our very own Jim Christina writes this about it. Since he can't be here tonight, I'd like to share the review that he wrote of this book. Under the guise of Blake S. Lee, Sue has written a tantalizingly delicious story of an ages-old murder in the early times of San Diego. As Sue is going to be a guest on the radio show, The Writer's Block, on May 12th, I received a copy and read it front to back with nary a breath taken.
Thank you, Jim.
And Jim, I'm right there with you. That's how I read it, too. The story is crystal sharp and easy to stay with, and for a first-time writer, surprisingly well-crafted and well-told. Being from the San Diego area, her locations are spot on, as were her musings of the San Diego of old. I would most certainly recommend this book to any lover of history or historical fiction. It reads like a movie and certainly leaves you wanting more at its terminus. 5 stars and a huge hooray from a fellow writer.
Thank you very much, Jim. Thank you, Bobby.
I know that I felt the same way as I was reading the book. And some of what you do so beautifully is you take us on this journey as the reporter Sarah Schilling is the cub reporter, and she's investigating, and we're seeing the story unfold through her research and the people she interviews, especially Peter McGraw, the policeman that was involved early on in the investigation. But because Peter was alive, of course, in 1933, through his eyes and others, you show us an early San Diego that is really fun.
It was.
And you take us to places from the zoo to areas called different department stores and stores that these main characters are involved with. You take us to Shantytown and Yankee Bill's Eatery and Ocean Beach. And you take us to the Studio Club and Stingery. Tell us just a little bit about what was going on in San Diego at the setting of this book.
During the 30s, it was certainly a time of change. As you can read in the book, it was at one point, just up to this point, it was a very quiet town. It was a western city on the border where tourists were coming in, but that was a problem as well because tourists were coming into San Diego and going south of the border to spend their money at the Agua Caliente casino down there, and later on at the horse track. San Diego was at a bend in the road where they didn't know whether to keep it a quiet, Eastern-valued town or make it into a Las Vegas like they wanted, some people really wanted to do, like Las Vegas was just beginning. And some of the starter-ups down in Tijuana had brought all the money we wanted to keep for ourselves. So this was a time of conflict.
And the young, our victim, Chris.
Yes.
And his friend, Jackie.
Yes.
Are able, as young boys, Chris is how old?
Yes, he's only 7 years old. And it's interesting, when I talk to people who remember those days, they remember the freedom. They remember getting on streetcars. They remember going to the zoo. I talked to a woman the other night who said, I remember walking 5 miles to go to the zoo, and nobody was frightened to have us do this. And we were young kids. We were 7. We mm-hmm. were 8. She wasn't. But people have recalled doing this when they were that young. It was very different. And then when this crime happened to be in a pack of different crimes that were unsolved at that time. And it was one of 5. And what happened was doors started getting closed. People started getting very frightened. You know, as we talk about a time of change, it's also a time of change when the book was set in the 1990s, because that was a whole change in research from the paper trail to the computer age.
We have a caller. Okay. So I am going to answer the phone. Hi, and welcome to the Writer's Block. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, it's Jim Christina.
Hi, Jim.
Hi, Bobby. Hi, Sue.
Hi, Jim.
I'm so sorry that I had to bail on you guys tonight, but I have been so sick all day.
I heard. I'm sorry. I hope you get better very quickly.
Well, I should be better tomorrow because I'm going to, I don't know what I'm going to do with these new pills, but my God.
Well, we miss you here tonight.
Well, I miss being there because I really, really, really wanted to talk to Sue about Old Town San Diego and her story and how to pronounce that kid's last name.
Abkhazian?
Abkhazian. We think Abkhazian or Abkhazian.
Yeah.
And not wanting to give away the plot, well, the plot is given away already, but the storyline and the actual story of the book, I just need to know if his friend's brother and his gang was involved in that death.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I absolutely believe so. And that was one of the beauties of research, is you can trace out the lifelines of these people, whereas Pete McGraw couldn't do that. He couldn't see how the future steps that these people would take would validate his belief that they were all part of a gang and they were all very, very sick people.
Yes.
But as you know, the young fellow by the name of Johnson was actually the suspect who was in the book, did die at San Quentin. The fellow in the book, whose name was David, actually did die in a terrible accident back in New Jersey.
Right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. So these all happened. Another thing... Johnson himself was put in prison for killing a younger man. So mm-hmm. so he continued in his path all through his life. So that was very interesting question, Jim. Thank you very much.
Jim, what did
oh,
you
you're very welcome.
What did you
and
like?
I also have to tell you, yeah. Go ahead.
No, go
Bobby.
Ahead. No, I'll be quiet. Go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to tell you, Sue, that I just thoroughly well, you read my review.
Thank
just
you.
Just thoroughly
yes.
enjoyed this book, and it was such a breath of fresh air to read such good writing out of a new writer.
Well, thank you very much.
My pleasure. And I know you taught English and stuff, but...
Well, it's a whole different thing, writing and teaching.
Oh, yes, I'm well aware.
And especially in the editing part of it, because it's very difficult to edit your own work. This started yes. out as 800 pages.
and then you said it went down to 400.
Then it went down to 400 and then down to a readable 330.
So I
took out huge blocks. But thank you for calling in. I appreciate
it. I have to tell you that I thoroughly enjoyed your book, and I so wanted to meet you. And I will get down to San Diego someday. And we'll talk
about your great books, too. I enjoyed them. You know, your books are like watching a TV series. It's like watching the old westerns I was brought up on.
Thank you very much for sharing. Mine are a little grittier than like territory.
A wee bit, yes.
As Bobby called them when we first started this thing, it's salty.
Yes.
It's salty. Very good.
But characters are true to life, and that's what I like about writing those.
Well, you know, while we're talking about salty themes, a lot of people, a lot of women particularly, are afraid to pick up this book because of the subject matter, a child, uh-huh. a brutal death of a child. Can you comment on that and how it's approached in this book?
I think that you did probably the best job of approaching the subject without being graphic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have a tendency to get graphic.
Okay.
But you got it in there with very little graphic, but you saw the picture. I mean, in your head, you mm-hmm. saw the picture of this boy on the dock.
Okay, yes, mm-hmm. yes.
And I don't think, if people were to know, and then our listeners... Feel free to email me on this if you'd like.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't be afraid to read this book because the subject matter is about a boy dying. It's so tastefully handled that it doesn't even bother you.
Thank you. Thank you. I tried to balance the drama of people, the enduring love, with the brutality of the child's death.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
tried to make his voice come through in their love for each other that actually extended over generations, mm-hmm. you know, until
right,
1990,
right, right.
until...
Was the part where was the detective and the kid's mother, did that actually happen, or was that
no.
your fiction?
No, that's part of the fiction. You know,
okay.
I want to read to you my disclaimer. I wrote, this is a fictional account of an actual incident that was perceived through lenses distorted by time, memories, and bias. The names of the characters have been deliberately changed to maintain the anonymity of those individuals upon whom they are based. Some characters and settings are fictional, added to drive the story and give background color. So yes, some of those people are composites of people I read about in newspapers
and
information of the time.
Well, and she just weaves.
You did a beautiful job.
Yeah.
Thank you.
She weaves such a great story, and there are twists and turns, and there are things that we that are interesting but not necessarily significant when we're reading that we discover, you know, chapters later. It's very significant.
Sure.
And
sure.
That's one of those, you know, page turn. That's what makes it such a page turner, because you really want to know about the character in, that's introduced in chapter two, and how he suddenly appears, you know, much later, and you put that two and two together. We're kind of in
You're talking about Paco.
Yeah, about Paco. We're, you know, we're encouraged to be like that cub reporter in a way ourselves, as we're discovering what she's discovering. And
you know, both of main characters, both Pete and Sarah Schilling, are flawed. They have their weaknesses. Mm-hmm. I think that's what mm-hmm. makes them more enjoyable. They're not, you know, he won the Medal of Valor, which doesn't
right.
exist. That doesn't exist, but he did. And, you know, that story about the Agua Caliente heist, that actually did happen. And uh-huh. and yet I put him in there, but I don't think there was a Pete McGraw who stopped the bandits.
Probably not. But he was a great character.
Oh, he's a great character.
A little bit crooked, a little bit honest, and I was San Diego policeman back in the 30s.
Well, and we get to see him through the eyes of folks that he worked with who are still alive that she interviews, and we see,
right.
you know, their perception of him. And I that's another thing that I really liked about this is we kind of get a well-rounded we're given a lot of information to come up with our own, just, you know, our own thoughts about
right.
each character.
Right.
You know,
I don't want to keep you.
Oh, no,
I just wanted to call and apologize and tell Sue how much I enjoyed her book.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
And
I hope
it's hard writing Blake S. Lee and then Sue.
You know what you have to do is give me a call when you come down to San Diego.
It's
going to be a long time before I make that drive again.
I come down to La Jolla once a year for
right.
meetings.
Okay.
And you know, La Jolla is where you taught. And
yes.
I lived right the next town up in Del Mar. So.
Right, right. That's what you said.
Well, what she
at
did.
At any rate, thank you so much for coming in and joining Bobby tonight. I'm sorry. I just couldn't make it.
It is certainly my pleasure, and I'm so
deeply
honored.
But I will be there for a 1-year anniversary show next week, Bobby.
Yes. Okay.
All right.
Looking forward to it.
You better be.
Oh no, I'll be there. But running the board isn't that hard, so you're doing good.
She's doing well.
Thanks, Jim.
Bobby.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon. And Sue, we'll talk to you soon as well.
Okay.
Okay. Great. See you next week. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye, ladies.
Bobby, you mentioned something I thought was really interesting. You were talking about how the twists and turns of the story, that's the beauty, that's the fascinating quality of researching. You don't know where you're going to go. Every time you start delving, it takes you in a new direction. And I don't know if people working on computers get that mm-hmm. wonderful buzz of finding something.
I wondered yeah. about that because yeah. Sarah's doing microfiche and she's, you know, she's looking at old records and land titles and all of those things that are paper driven.
Yes.
And I get concerned as we're moving more and more towards this, you know, cutting edge technology.
Mm-hmm.
The primary documents that writers and historians have counted on for years,
mm-hmm.
People's journals and letters, and you know, we're going so digital. I wonder how these stories like this, something that's happening today that somebody might want to write about in 70 years,
mm-hmm.
how will they access
have the information?
Yeah,
that's very interesting thought. Yes,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah. How has research? That's a really great question since we're talking about research. You started your research in 1990.
Yes.
You came back in 2005. Are there differences in...
Well, I didn't do my research in 2005. I had done it all
already
in 1990. And the research involved going to county records at the county administration building, going to the archives down in the basement of the newspaper, going to the pathology, the coroner's office to read the autopsy report.
Mm-hmm.
Going to Scripps Institute of Oceanography to check the tides back in 1933, interviewing witnesses. People remembered this case in 1990 as though it was yesterday. They remembered the turnover of police chiefs that was talked about in this book, a revolving door of police chiefs. They remembered the people who wanted the city to go one way and the people who wanted the people to go the city to go the other way, and the drama going on at that time. So it was a paper chase, but like you said, it was very fulfilling when you'd find something in a new direction.
Tell us, I'm going back to kind of my little list of favorite characters. Can you tell us a little bit about Catherine, Chris's mom, the victim's mom, Catherine?
Well, she was fictional. And I have, my daughter asked me to get the name of somebody I thought would be a female role model. And I sort of thought of Catherine. I think of Catherine as a very strong little individual. She had just a terrific loss, an awful loss. And in the book, her closeness to her son comes across, and her isolation and her grief comes across. And she, instead of taking the victim role, she becomes stronger, and she actually gives what Pete McGraw needs as the clue to finding who a suspect was. She also delves deeper into her art, which happens to be music. I think she's a very strong character. She takes time out to help Pete when he falls apart completely, mm-hmm. When he loses this case.
Mm-hmm. And I really, you know, Chris, we never get to meet him head on because he's left us by the time, you know, the story is being told. But we get to see Chris, the model airplanes,
yes,
that are in his bedroom that hang over, you know, over his bed, and
right.
Various people that are interviewed about him. You know, we really get, he liked to go to the zoo, and we get a really wonderful feel for this young boy, and obviously the love that existed in that family. The title, Rest Now, Beloved. Can you tell me a little bit about how you chose that title, or how the title chose you?
Well, I wanted the title to be ambiguous. I in the title, it doesn't tell you who is to rest, but there are several people who are beloved in this, and when there is closure, there is rest, mm-hmm. and that's what happens in this book. There is a closure put to mm-hmm. this child's life.
And I did feel that as I was reading the book, at different times I would think, okay, there's another beloved who's going to be able to rest.
Yes.
And so I found that title to be really so very appropriate.
Right.
And wondered. The cover of the book is really beautiful, and there's a red rose on the cover. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about the blood red rose?
The blood red rose was a rose that I placed at Chris's grave when I first got the case. And interesting about, you asked me about the publishing process in this, and I went through Create Space, which is connected with Amazon. And as far as the cover goes, I had found the cover of the angel. A very dramatic picture of an angel face on on the net. And when I went to get the cover designed, I asked them if they could use that picture, and they said no, they couldn't use that picture because it was copyrighted. Mm-hmm. So they came up with something out of their own archives, and it was the same angel but from a different perspective. Uh-huh. And I asked them if they could put a red rose in there because the motif of a rose follows throughout, the blood red rose. Mm-hmm. Catherine was also into raising a botanics, and she created this blood red rose, which follows the story as well.
And she has a daughter eventually named Rose.
And she has a daughter. That's absolutely right.
Rose is throughout the book. And we don't really want to do a lot of spoiler. We don't really want to give much away because we really, really want you to read the book. When we were talking earlier this evening, kind of getting ready for the show, Sue, we chose something to read aloud because we felt that we'd like the audience to have a chance to hear your written word. So if that's okay with you, I'll go ahead and read, or would you like to?
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Bobby, and read. Thank you.
So I'm reading a passage from the book. It happens fairly into the book, but it's will give you a really good idea about how beautifully the prose is. But right now, that one small, age-old, mangled, black-and-white snapshot gave him, Pete, more comfort than all the sweet smoke in a Chinese opium den. My God, but wasn't Catherine beautiful? Didn't her hair smell like the out-of-doors? Didn't her dark eyes flash and pierce his soul? She could be tough or she could be soft. Her skin was like the inside of a rose petal. Pete held the picture to his nose and inhaled deeply of the imagined roses and fresh air. Fragments of thoughts flooded his brain as though it were but yesterday. Damned rascal time, man's delusion, just a mortal's invention, a feeble attempt to understand the master's chronology. God knows no time. To God, it was but yesterday. It was a summer's night down on the sand in Ocean Beach, within earshot of the hurly-burly of Wonderland Amusement Park. Beyond the San Diego River Channel, where it flowed into the Pacific, waves peaked and green iridescence flashed from a red tide lit by the full moon. On the stiller water, the many-colored lights of Mission Beach homes bounced cheerfully as they were reflected on the ripples. He recalled standing knee-deep in the surf, casting his line aimlessly into the waves. He imagined the smell of the salty sea air, catching the flash of the crest of a breaking wave in the moonlight, and the feel of sand between his toes. Never, now even after the near eternity of another world, the memory still sizzled. In his room, he imagined the heat of the flames from the bonfire he'd built for her comfort as she watched him fish. She waited, sitting on a towel on the sand. He had turned around to say something, but then he fell silent, almost reverently. He remembered not being able to call out to her. The classic features of her beautiful face were painted rosy and a warm orange in the light of the fire. Instead of speaking, he left the fishing line to its own work, knelt behind her, and put his arms around her. His eyes had misted. Did they water from the pungent wood smoke of the fire or from noticing the goosebumps that had sprouted on Catherine's thin white arms in the coolness of the evening? Or was it from the sudden awareness that this was but a moment in time, never to happen again? It was but a fleeting happiness that they shared, the young Irishman cop and the older dark beauty who had been matured by childbirth and mellowed by sorrow. Whatever it was that they shared, passed too quickly to be tangible. It was simply a beginning without an end. Thinking about the lies they'd had to tell others in order to get through that night made Pete smile ruefully. You need to get this book.
Beautifully read,
Rest
Bobby.
Now,
thank
beloved.
Thank you.
Oh, it's so great. So, let's just talk a little bit with the time we have left about, you've shared some things about the writing process.
Yes.
What is a typical, when you were writing the book initially, what was kind of your typical writing day like?
A lot of times I'd have to do the work that I had to do, get that out of the way so I could just put all my energy into closing the door, going into the room and writing. And then the rewriting. I taught my students that you revise and rewrite and revise, and that's what you do. I probably wrote each chapter 20 times before I got it to the point. And then when I was done, I wasn't even done. Had to cut out a whole lot. But trying to find the right word is part of the job. That's the beauty of English. There's so many beautiful words for getting an emotion across. And finding that word to fit into this sentence is a challenge.
There's a lot of dialogue in the book.
Yes.
It really puts us, especially scenes between Sarah and Pete when he's sharing the story and he's going back and describing 1933 and such. Mm-hmm. Lots of dialogue. I would assume dialogue is fairly easy for you to write. Tell us a little bit about that process.
You know, that's interesting because people have really enjoyed the dialogue in this story. And dialogue does come easy to me, and I don't know why, but I would hear the voices. I would hear their voices. They would tell me, you know, and coming up with some of the old colloquialisms of the 30s, I used the computer for that because I didn't know what they said mm-hmm. for different things. Mm-hmm. But the dialogue came easy, yeah.
And it does. It just flows. It just absolutely flows. Let's see. What were there any major challenges that you had as you were writing the book? Anything that was a stumbling point for you?
Well, as you know, this book really, the case itself, maybe I should go back into that a little bit, but the case was started out as a homicide. And it was taken over by the police department in San Diego as a homicide. And then it was taken to the autopsy, and they found that it was definitely a homicide. They had all the evidence they needed. And they pursued it like that for about 10 days. Then the sheriff's department took it over, citing jurisdiction. And when they took it over, they exhumed the body, and all the evidence came up here to Los Angeles. And it got lost, got misplaced. Nothing ever happened to the case. It was put on the files for, or on the shelves for 60 years. My challenge was where to write the truth and where to write fiction. Because I wanted to blur the line between the two. So somebody reading this wouldn't know which was truth and which was fiction.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's a.
I hope that.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, we love to investigate a little bit about even what authors have inspired you, or do you enjoy reading yourself?
I think Joyce Carol Oates is probably one of my most favorite writers. I just love every book she's written, and I think also she's directed my writing because she writes fictional accounts of real true crime mm-hmm. stories. I'd love for her to read this. I like the nonfiction of Laura Hildebrandt, who wrote Unbroken.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the character in Cheryl Strayed, her story, I can't think of the name. Carol Strayed, about the young girl who took the long walk out.
I can't think of it either.
Okay.
That's what happens when we can only have so many notes in front of us.
That's right.
One of the things that you did was you received a glowing review from Kirkus.
Yes.
Through the Kirkus Reviews, which we haven't talked about on this show before. Can you tell us a little bit about the Kirkus review process?
Yes, I can. When I finished the book, I thought one of the things I needed to do is get an objective look at the book to see if it was in fact any good. And so I took the risk of sending my book into Kirkus, paying the money, $4.99, to get it reviewed. I was told at the time that they were very very honest, and I might be really very disappointed by what I read. So I put this in October, sent it in October, and then in December, on Christmas Eve, I got the review, but I wouldn't open it until the next day. And I was very happy and surprised to know that they had written a very good one, and not only that, but they had showcased it in their newsletter. So, you know, it's a good way to go. If you think you have written a good book, go the whole way and get somebody objective to look at it. And if you, like Kirkus, if you're not pleased with the results, you don't have to publish them. But in my case, I was very pleased with what they wrote. And I would definitely have my book reviewed.
Yeah, they wrote a great review, and I just highlighted in bold a couple of things that they said within the body of this really terrific review. Lee's engrossing prose is rooted in specific detail that wonderfully evokes the setting of San Diego, both contemporary and historical, a complex, well-plotted tale with an engaging setting. Were some of the key things that jumped out to me in this review. And again, since we hadn't talked about Crickets before, and this is a radio program where we are bringing writers and readers together, mm-hmm. We always love to highlight something that potential authors maybe don't know about, and that this is a great place, or readers where you want to go to find some great things to read. This can be a great place to go for suggestions.
Right.
Do you have any advice that you would give to an author, a first-time author, or really anybody that's been writing? Any nuggets, gold nuggets you could throw out their way?
I would say just follow your dream. Follow your dream right from your heart, and then be critical. Be very critical about what you've written. Take out words, put in other words, rewrite sentences, and only when you feel that you have written what you really, truly want to express, it takes many, many, many attempts to get the final.
To get final right. This show is called The Writer's Block, and we love to ask that question of our guests. Do you experience writer's block? And if so, tell us about it.
I'm experiencing it right now. I'm starting to work on historical fiction that has to do with the life of my great-grandmother, actually, who during the Civil War, who went down into the South from Vermont to stay with a Confederate widow. And the dynamics of those two women together in a house just has always struck me as a wonderful, wonderful plot. And I've done tons and tons of research, and now I can't seem to hear the voices. I can't seem to get it going. And yes, I'm not sure. It's funny. I had two German shepherds, and they would come into my den with me when I'd write, and I called them my muses. Well, I lost them last year.
Both of them.
And I just got a puppy. So I'm hoping that she's going to be my muse.
Be your new muse.
So whatever it takes.
Yes. What are the names? Tell us again. How were the ladies related to you?
Okay. Well, my great-grandmother was from Vermont, from a small town in Vermont. And she married a man who... was a surgeon in the Civil War. And I have all his Civil War letters that I've read through primary sources. You mentioned that earlier.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's fabulous. He was in on all these major battles, and he mentions some of the leaders that you read about in history books. It's just fabulous. But anyway, she goes down to be with him, and he's not available. He's gone when she gets there. So she's stuck with this woman in Virginia. And the two of them being together just sounds like a great story.
Does he survive the war?
Oh, they both did.
Okay,
yes.
And the husband
went on to have children.
Yeah. Okay, well, you wouldn't be here, is what you're telling me.
That's right. But I'm having a hard time getting over the writer's block there, and
yeah.
It's frustrating. It really is. You just look at the computer like it's an enemy. Like, uh-huh. It's closed up on you.
you do a lot of book, you go out and you address book clubs and things. Tell us about that process.
Yeah, we were talking about this earlier, Bobby. So many people do the blogging, and I just, being an older woman, I'm just not very comfortable with that. I do Facebook, and I have my own Facebook page under Rest Now Beloved. Other than that, it's more of an individual sort of personal, person-to-person sort of thing that I've gotten such enjoyment from. I go to book clubs, and I've been going to as many as four a month, and I found women, particularly in reading this book, are so sensitized to the story, and so into the characters, and they're so intelligent. And their questions are very, I walk away from each meeting feeling inspired.
Mm-hmm. That's
yes.
Wonderful.
Yes. So that's how I do my marketing.
Yes. And while you were answering that question, I had a thought, which of course has just gone away. book clubs. Oh, I know. You talked about the book initially was 800 pages, and because you were doing Create Space, that's kind of being an independent, independent publisher. Did you then hire an editor to help you?
I did. I hired Lisa Wolf, and she was wonderful. She found inconsistencies that I hadn't found, and she told me it was too long, and so I was able to take out parts she suggested that I'd cut out, and I needed the help there.
I think that's one of the challenges that I have discovered over years of reading books that have come my way. So often with an independently published book, it really needed editing. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, either, you know, the author didn't really understand that it needed editing, mm-hmm. or didn't hire the editor. But my encouragement to anybody out there listening is, if you are going to do independent publishing, invest in good editing.
Absolutely. Go the extra mile. Get somebody you trust, because there's nothing that looks more unprofessional than a book that's loaded with mistakes. In fact, it was very embarrassing that after my editor went through it and made the corrections, I went through it myself and did the editing, revising, and republished it without her looking at it a second time. And published it, and I had friends call me up and say in their reading, and readers that I didn't know who emailed me and said, "You've got a lot of mistakes in there."
Oh my
gosh.
So
I had to go back to the editor and ask her, because as I cut things out, I revised it. Mm-hmm. And you cannot see your own mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Totally makes sense.
Even though I taught literature in English, I cannot see my own mistakes.
Well, and sometimes it's even as a reader and I look at a book, I can almost tell, I'm not sure exactly why, to be honest, but I can flip through a book and go, the font, you know, I can kind of look at a book and say, this must be perhaps self-published, mm-hmm. and then look to see, because the font choice, the size of page, the way where the number is on the page, different things. I don't really think I have a critical eye, but there's just a different look. I mean, there's just a whole different look about it, mm-hmm. unless you've really worked with professionals that can really shape it up.
Well, you know, as a self-publisher, you have tons of different formats, mm-hmm. that you can use, and it's a hard choice to try to come up with one that works for you and looks professional. Mm-hmm. And I think in my book, the compliments I've received are that it's very clear, and people enjoy the font because it's easy to read.
Very easy to read. And yeah. I do a lot of my reading at very wee hours of the morning, oftentimes with a book light on, uh-huh. so I don't keep my husband awake. And I love it when a font is, you know, like, oh, I can read that.
Yes, right.
Do you prefer to read the written word on paper, or are you an electronic reader?
No, I'm still a paper reader.
My
book is available on Kindle, but I love old libraries with the wood smell and the moldy smell of books.
I miss card catalogs.
Oh, gosh.
I would find the most amazing things in a card catalog drawer as I'm looking for the thing I'm looking for, and you go by all those other things that you weren't looking for that don't show up in searches on computers.
That's right.
And it's such a tragedy. There was something about those yellowed, you know, index cards in there, and how many fingers had, you know, been flashed through those, I miss that.
and I even miss the rules of the old libraries where everybody was quiet.
Yeah.
Now you go in, everybody's talking, running around, it's crazy.
I know. With our few minutes that we have left, let's be sure that our listeners can find you and find the book. Why don't you give us again Facebook and how they can reach you.
Okay, on Facebook, I have a page, Rest Now Beloved, the title of the book. On Amazon, it's for sale on Amazon for, I think, $14. And it's and also on Kindle. And it's under Rest Now Beloved by Blake S. Lee.
The pseudonym.
last name is Lee. And that's about it. I'm also very available. My email, you can get my email on my Facebook page, because I would love to come and speak with your book club.
Yeah, that would be really, really great.
Or your club. club meeting.
And with our last moment, why did you choose to write under a pseudonym?
Because my last name is very difficult. It's easier to remember Lee than it is to remember my married name.
Love that. I think you're the first person we've talked to that's written under a pseudonym.
And the pseudonym comes from my daughter's name.
I knew there would be a backstory to that.
Her name is Blakesley, so I broke it down into Blake S.
Oh, that's terrific. That's terrific. Well, we surely have enjoyed our time together tonight, and we can't thank you enough for having made the trip to be here with us live in the studio. I just am thrilled to have been able to spend this time with you. And do you have any parting word, anything you'd like to say before we sign off for this week?
No, I surely thank you, Bobby. This has been a pleasure.
Well, we look forward to meeting you again next week, next Thursday, on the Writer's Block, where readers and writers come together. Do check us out on our Facebook page, The Writer's Block Radio Show, and you can now catch us on iTunes, and also we are now on Google Play for all of you on Android. And again, we thank you so much for listening. Please share this show with your friends. Let's get some more readers and writers together out there. And until next week, this is it from The Writer's Block.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.